I'm going to read a poem from the book before this current book, which was called Spell. It has a drawing by William Kentridge on the cover. I had to sort of bribe them to let me have this drawing, so I was very pleased to get it. And I'm going to read this poem called Thread, because it's dedicated to Anne Hamilton. Can you hear?
Yeah.
Spool of dark green thread rolls slowly downward onto a daisy field, not found unwinding downhill most narrow path. Term of the unmended, darker than grass, fabricated, the pit of a plum, damp, headless rabbit, tune-stripped air. Some murderous repeat pre-selects the abrasive, and now all implication swelters diaristically, oh, my small lord. Please provide an alabaster form to lose the system. Am ambient, am docile among contractions. Also, I am an integer of false claims, as if that drawing were by my own hand. So speaketh away from adulation its syntactical shape, already fate's tightest knot. How the machine hates an anomaly, how it abuses imperfection. Singularity, whose mode is infinite starlight, and her own pleasures dream swept up onto a ladder climbing toward the voice you may have known. Beloved swims in a pond reflecting the constellated grief of centuries, monks gathered around the bier of St. Francis, walls sweat, where later a sacred fount beckons the oldest awe into its stainless steel basin. And in the night, a girl writes words in colored chalk on the pavement stone. Every force evolves a form. And the petals of a rose have fallen into partial pinks and collapsed browns as if soiled or bruised, and the cicadas have gone back into the underworld, webbed wings strewn, red eyes blind. The dream has left me bewildered. My neighbor's dog barked it open, and out I fell into the milky dawn, into the practice of everyday life. Were we to return, the covers would open and the sheets introduce us to a sentence drawn from Spinoza, he who spoke of a third kind of knowledge, and my legs would wrap around your body in the poetics of space. This would occur after the end, after the sense of sight, after the apocalypse, and all the words we lived among. You would describe the art of interference, and I would argue for the will to believe. All this before our morning coffee set on a small table in the field not far from a stream where a mockingbird shapes time above the threaded grass. A spider has netted the air. This comes in a kit. Seeds also available, see below. Blissed out on the sea's dragnet, war fires extinguished, and so candles lit for the drowned, many but not all accounted. The arch has collapsed, singers departed. Thread pulls at the far horizon, agitating the hour. The salty cauldron of the Nile rubs into our wounds, crusty palimpsest of the profile freeze. To go out from the city, find a path to install on the wall where the sun, ever full, distributes plenitude and its agents, grace, levity, and chance. Let them beget new justice into our dithering trials. All along the edges, there are crude blue margins, fists of brown leaves. A mask floats above, buoyant and empty. Yah, yah, says bird, leaving the yard. Voice recedes into eternity's pale marker. A video shows replications of figures crowded into onto rectangles, a choir of ravenous beetles filling the trees. Blind slippage of the unanchored field. That protein assemblage is taut among least vibration. This inner song had best abate, lest all achieve stasis around a melancholy pall. Our being's repeated inferences and the lyric joys hinge inconclusively into the aesthetic dump where our hopes flip for... Blind slippage in the unanchored field. That protein assemblage is taut among least vibrations. This inner song had best abate, lest all achieve stasis around a melancholy pall. Our being's repeated inferences and the lyric joys hinge inclusivity onto the aesthetic dump where all our hopes flip for breathable air at all our thresholds, glass, door, cup, the books and the fabric, the ever spiraling list traced away from duration to install the silent archive. To Anne Hamilton. I'll read you a few poems from my more recent book called Door by an anonymous artist. Time. No. Not my friend.
Whatever you want.
Yeah.
Take all the time.
No, people are here to hear you talk. Me talk, you talk, we talk. All right. There are a bunch of poems in Door called Door, and this is the first one, and maybe the only one that I'll read today. Door. World fills up, imperious pace. Vagrant matter into the humming pooled at the feet. What soul went down? What inventory? Mud, slippage, tracks, marked shells, anointed there, the ravenous reel flowering above torsion of waves, unexpected threshold thrown open, crossed. Hand, Giotto. So this is based on the painting in the sequence in the arena, the chapel in the, no, the other one. The other chapel. Whatever. Terrible. Anyway, it's Joachim's sacrifice. Where, if you remember, Joachim is clawing his way toward a hut that's aflame, and above above him, or it actually the scene is a single hand descending, just a single hand coming down from the edge. It's astonishing. It's not clear whose hand it is. It's just a hand. Hand, Giotto. Over here, the circle theme continues without a clock, uncountable and unmarked despite a pouring sound despite slight lesions in the rock. A hand is waving silently from under cover of cloud we said was blanketing the sky, and so indeed the sky is blank, but for a reverie of reach and touch, the ancient fingered dark. The word I was trying to recall is fungible, but it doesn't mean what I had sought, so now I need to trade it for another, one that means porous, means mutable, means a shadow can pass through unnoticed, means you turn and nothing before comes after, nothing takes hold. So this is a poem I've never read aloud called Habitat. I'll give it a try. If I don't like it, I'll stop. Habitat. Do not partition or curtail the fearful crowd. They are already stranded. Your belts and sandals will not reach them. Oh, I should stop and say, I was talking to Michael Russell last night, and he asked me if I'd read Agamben's The Highest Poverty. And I said yes. I didn't remind him that he had told me about this book a year ago, and I dutifully went and bought it. It's a very beautiful meditation on the idea of time being outside of a clock. It's one of the things it's a meditation on. It's talking about the monks in the early days of monkhood. So some of the language in the beginning of this poem comes from that reading of the Agamben, The Highest Poverty. Habitat. Do not partition or curtail the fearful crowd. They are already stranded. Your belts and sandals will not reach them in their wandering distress. I myself will be wearing a stole with tassels. Sometimes choices are words. Sometimes they come as tactile objects to be touched. The contingent of insurgent migrants moving swiftly over the stark terrain, they have no time for these niceties or what is kept under our vestments, dangerously excitable. Today in the shower, I was recalling orgasm as a layered volume of flow so intricately woven as to be the sensed motion of time slowly opening. Now, at last, it is raining. These weathers are included as reminder that our inner and outer beings are breathing into the seams of the day, and that the temporal scansion is as uninhabitable as a rainbow. The clock, however, is full of accusations and praise meted out into the days. It cannot know the barefoot figures fleeing toward the harbor, their faces illumined, their limbs arcing into shadow wings. It cannot know how light dilates evening. And dreams, what of them? Will they bleed through, find a way to tell of our passage, relate grass and stream, three coyotes basking on the hill, swirl of cloud, the hawk's high whistle, no camera, no lamp, no held image to capture the unpredictable path. Enlightenments, vistas, storied performances, everyone up close and sweaty with desire, montage of the nameless boy with his entourage of lovers. They climbed to the top of the spire as I watched the boy and two girls wearing blue shorts that flared in the wind, and then they could not find a way down, their bodies entangled in metal casements. Meanwhile, branches had been collected and arranged, stapled to a wall, but no one had thought to find water, so they began to wither, their leaves browned and stiff, and the woman from the gallery wept and tore her skirt into ribbons that the bowerbirds took. The bowerbirds weren't in the dream. They are a distraction. You can look them up on TikTok, where there are other pranks, jokes, dances, and tricks that resemble dreams. What happened? The secular spirit gropes for solace and refuge. The painter could see the scene depicting the sainted monk in his habit among birds, depicting the ravished angels strewn across the blue wall's firmament in a storm of grief. These figments, stories without witness, rendered as material fact. And so we stare at their silence, its reservoir of the miraculous offered on trust. That's another. Moving right along. So Anne's made a wonderful little handout that's around, yes, available. And in it is a copy of this poem, which is called Fragment Stone, and has a little epigraph. Oh, I'm gonna read along. Epigram. I never get it right. It's from Wittgenstein. What has a soul or pain to do with a stone? It's dedicated to the photographer Fia Backstrom. You could walk not far through the grass to the shed barefoot, restless eye landing on distance there, not far. You could walk looking down at various grasses, weeds, clover along the way, your toes in the green, the undersides of your feet, the cool damp. Where is significance, you think, as you imagine walking across grass to the shed barefoot? What counts here? Does anything count on the short walk while looking down and then over, then up at the catbird in the lilac where there are now dry brown sprays, at the robin hopping in the grass over there? What counts, you ask, incredulous at the pace, not your pace, the pace of time, as if rolling downhill, gathering speed, wound around itself like giant twine, but invisible, so not present in the sense of seen, the way you assign to the visible presence, even as what is on your mind as you walk across the grass toward the shed is invisible. Names, their persons, hunger, mistakes, the lost and the recently slaughtered because of words believed by the hopeless, lost from view, tossed into the past like a weed, a rind, a stone found in grass to find solace in the particular single crow high in the dead ash. It's one note, cry, sky, pale blue, low light, sliding across wires. Okay, I think I'm going to read read three poems, and then I'll read a final poem. How's that? That suit? Yeah. You're not? Oh,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Three very long poems.
Yes.
This one's called "Fable of the Barn." Fable of the Barn. A green truck is passing, carrying chance, but no way to clean the windows or to kill the stink bugs in their gray shields, their slow march up, their endurance. If I look away, I will find some words that don't belong to me, stolen, borrowed, or apprehended at the cost of an alphabet, its acquisition of knowledge, of song. Singing along, I am five again and happy in the sand or unhappy watching how the boys make things from blocks. I would like also to be making things, but not from blocks, maybe from paint. When I made a painting, there wasn't any time. How to not have time? Paint. Or wander away from what you know into strangeness, a sure way to cancel time or to make time fill up and not empty out into the missing encomiums of memory. This adventure hurts my heart, someone said uneasily, crossing the bridge and entering the opening in the newly painted barn. A season was waiting there with sheep and goats and small rodents making the dry grass move slightly as if in a film. The barn was there with the books and papers, brittle and frail in boxes, eaten around the edges, dry as dry grass. We need rain, another said, which will cure you of the past. The downed leaves look bloody on the ground, I thought, and then wondered if the poem is a way of thinking to oneself or thinking to others. As if you were here as the words come, and we both wonder if we were ever in the barn. And the light? The light was like a kiss as the air shifted, so there were new shadows and the scent of hay and dung and a bright turquoise egg hidden above the broken window's sill, and who were then looking into the mouth where Aesop had spoken to the leaping creatures and went on his way across the continents, carrying a stick to move the grasses and to hit the stones on his path and to help him across the muddy waters streaming into the sea. Along the way he would sing, but we cannot know the tune, fast or slow, melodic or off pitch, voice low or high, nothing of the sound, even as it seems he could hear what the turtle, what the hare, what the stork said, what meanings they made from across the centuries into our unbelief. Okay, what did I say, three? Very hard. All right, this is another one I've never read. It's really a nasty poem. And I'm going to read it because I was sort of proud of writing a nasty poem. And it's sort of a mean poem. It has meanness in it. And the meanness derives from my mother, who was mean. I'm going to read it because I was watching Fran Drescher, the president of SAG-AFTRA, the other day. And she was talking about the fact that they were going to go on strike. The actors were going to join the writers who are already on strike. And in her incensed actress way, she talked about greed. And she just made this kind of comment about how the studios are all saying they don't have any money, and she's saying yes, and their CEOs are getting hundreds of millions of dollars. This is a story we know very well. So then I thought to myself, really the center of the problems of the life, or one of the centers of everything that's gone completely awry, is greed. So my mother used to call me a greedy girl. So this also has a little epigraph from Lisa Robertson's wonderful book, A Baudelaire Fractal. Sorry, Lisa. That's a novel of hers. And the line is, the girl is an alarm. Her lust is always articulate. Do I really want to read this?
Yeah.
The breeze is very nice. Okay. Come here, little girl, little green-eyed, greedy girl. Come along the sacred dial, its fortune wheeling across a childless night. Come out from the damaged sphere of gods. Do not look. They are contained in marble. They are not familiar with your pain. Have no room for choice. as if to stagger the vocabulary love into increments, as if to not dip down into the vulgate of dreams. He touched, he left, he smiled along the coastal, lace, the bloodied sheets, ships, ship, all the muscular boys, all cause shackled from the entourage to this greedy girl, drowned in the ancestral atmosphere, pulleys, landings, rocks, preachers, goods, bloodied lace roiling along the coast, the plantation shed, find the goodness, find the burning brand, fire seared and sing into the wasted lingo, into the wasted lingo of hope, oh greedy girl. Chimes, aggregate, repetitive, coal, sand, pebble, cloud, crop, and the sad petals, white rose, brown on the floor, white rose, furiously pure down to earth. Greedy girl comes down into earth, brown petals, this indictment, crime, the plural indictment, the force of a name, greedy girl, with your silver shoes, your torn slip, sniff the broken lobe, the soiled petals, walk swiftly across the parched field, stay in the refrain of never no more, walk swiftly, carry your dull weapons, greedy girl, your rusty blade, your parcel of seed, recall the stairwell and the toppled house, recall Jonah, the flight out of Egypt, recall the rivers of Babylon, recall smoke and the blistering flesh, the scent of fear, greedy girl, the towering flames rising over the circumference, the blue peninsula, some psalm, some song, some dance, this way, some path, come along, greedy girl, across the burning meadow, approaching the roofs, rising above the stony earth, plural rage, greedy girl, plural tears. Okay. George Floyd. It's called Hearsay. What did you say? I said, what? And in that dream, I was married to her, and she, I don't know who she was. Perhaps she was you, perhaps me, only me, marrying a better me. Perhaps now drilling down into its absurdity like a mole in the grass whose head got bit off by my cat before it was a metaphor. Like or as, I always forget. It is too hot, and the garden is sad, moving to its final stage, never a pretty sight. I, too, am moving to my final stage. Stage is also an interesting word as we think perhaps of Marlene Dietrich or Lena Horne or Prince. They, then, I danced to with my then BF in Minneapolis. Oh, Minneapolis, what did they say, he said? The garden is sad, it is too hot. The trouble with doing things on a hope in some words is they don't always come true. All men are created equal. All that talking the talk, saying the said. What did he say? I said. And after the final stage, when one has walked or been dragged off, so the whole scene is as empty as the glass by my bedside. The glasses by my father's bedside were kept separate while we were quarantined for polio, which killed him. And then I would try to find him in a dream. Word was that Marlene Dietrich made a pass at him, and I have a gold-plated knife he stole from the embassy in Moscow. Someone used the knife to pry something open, so it is damaged at its point, the way things get damaged by ill use. Do words get damaged by ill use, scratched, torn, stained, dulled down to their thinnest shadow, the shadow of lies and cruelty, as when you wandered out of earshot? Mm-hmm. So the last one is The Blue Door. This is dedicated to my great friend, Kenward Elmsley, who was the partner of Joe Brainard for many, many years, and a lyricist and a poet and a publisher who had a rather remarkable world, and he made a world. And he died a couple of years ago, and I wrote this, The Blue Door. The obligatory cancels its strophe. Let me get a grip and begin in this other patch where the air is. Am I among the vanishing? How does it feel? As if turning, as if falling, as if coming unstuck from the body's inconvenience? Too many questions spoil the poem. The poem as poem cannot reply. Which is why we need more voices, even as we know what happens when there are more voices. Noise, argument, rupture. Why not a single voice, one that represents everyone? Poem? Are you listening? A crucible of dalliance supersedes Goldilocks and all other pending catastrophes angling toward power. As if on the last day you could recall power. If only the field could retract, if only the field could retract into a new beginning, intact, complex, the geography of the many seeding the plural world with a cord, good replicating good, evil singular kept to its barren agenda. Prayers and wishes could then speed our recovery from the uninhabitable scald of the venal market. Not to be hysterical or polemical, not to confuse personal anxiety with the future, I was once at the Stray Dog Cabaret, once in unlit neighborhoods where sexy initiatives were underway, awaiting Jim Jarmusch. Clubs, bars, sudden upsweat encounters with the privileged poor, dancing with the stars. Meanwhile, another beginning in another district. I am seeing the headlights of an oncoming vehicle. I am seeing filmic snow. Oh, and I'm stepping into the new day like a doe among bucks, a girl in sequence. I am trying not to count lovers or shoes. The shoes gather episodic in twos. There are no agents, no inscriptions, as the story flows down into the rescinded pile. I have come to fear the punctuated day. I have come to wish I had done things differently, never to have begun with such sad disclosures, absent the stanza, the difficult vocabulary, wandering barefoot along an avenue before these piles, these sticks, the distant lump of dark vestigial matter and skittering sounds from under the floor lasting until dawn. And so looking outward where skies assemble their beautiful reconnaissance, traveling as if beckoning, as if to include. There are countless children wandering. Singles and plurals, one shoe, many children, or one child, many shoes. These discrepancies confuse the grammatical police. They do not know what to arrest. Please speak carefully, as this is a vote, and whether or not you have shoes, you need to say, to choose whether or not. What undergirds these words? What might be found? A frugal sandal, or the dazzling technicolor magic of the good witch's rubies. Everyone is after ruby slippers. We might sort through the archive of sneakers, the branded stores. We might look at the feet of strangers shod in tar and mildew, mud and blood. The goo trembled underfoot like history. The southern sky has turned peachy. I would like to wear it out tomorrow as a slip, and so slip through the hole in the sky into the azure assembly, the tiered swerve from universe to universe in my new attire, looking for a mate or moonstruck in the glitter of heaven. No guns allowed. If you listen carefully, you can hear the thrum of insomniac wings pulsating between episodes of cloud. In this atmosphere, nothing is shut, and so motion is the rule, motion without time, this time, our time, our habit of counting up and counting down, speaking in numbers as if they were thought. In the distance, I hear the sound of a creature being slain by another creature. The beings I love are creatures. Is writing a way of stalling for time, to delay the tasks in the next room, dishes and clothes, books and papers, the pile of shoes on the floor, the rugs, the drawer, chaotic with nails and hooks and small tools? Poem is too busy to answer. Words are like small magnets pulling other words toward them one by one, so the singles gather, and as they gather, they attest to the alignment that will become meaning. What was it you said about naming? It makes a way between unbeing and being, the definite flowing into the circulating infinite, the blue door opening the night sky. Thanks. Yeah.